Well, good morning or afternoon or evening, whenever you're listening around the world. This is WMC's Vox Pop. I'm Alan Shartok. Debate on the New York Police Department's stop-and-frisk policy reached a fever pitch this month as officials trade barbs amid what has thus far been hot and volatile summer in many of the nation's metropolitan areas, including New York, which saw 77 people shot in the first week of July, a 12% increase over the same period last year. On Monday, WNYC New York Public Radio posted an analysis showing about 770 guns recovered from over 680,000 stops across the city last year, a rate about 0.1%. There also remains a question of whether the policy is legal under the Fourth Amendment of the United States Constitution, which prohibits unreasonable searches and seizures. Joining me in the studio today is a great friend of this radio station, Albany Law School professor Vince Bonventure, author of New York Court Watcher, a blog devoted to commentary on developments at the Supreme Court, the New York Court of Appeals, and other state Supreme Courts nationwide, and founder and director of the Center for Judicial Process. All I can say, Vince, is wow. Vincent, welcome back to the Vox Pop.
Yeah, it's great to be back with you, Alan.
Well, it's just great to have you here with us. We're talking about, stop and frisk. So there's sort of a tension here, isn't there, between the Fourth Amendment to the Constitution and what the police in New York have been doing?
Well, absolutely. I mean, you know, even if there's just going to be a stop by police officers, there has to be some reason for it. There's got to be some reasonable suspicion. If you look at some of these figures, which you just mentioned, Alan, last year, for example, almost 700,000 stops. Only about 10% of them uncovered anything, any kind of criminality. That means 90% of them uncovered nothing. How could it be reasonable when 90% of the time they're uncovering absolutely nothing? The police are going well beyond what's required by the Constitution, which is at least reasonable suspicion to be stopping these individuals.
Now, because you have a crystal ball, by the way, I ought to give the number 1-800-348-2551. We have a fairly conservative Supreme Court of the United States who are going to have to, sooner or later, this is all going to get up there, right? And they're going to be able to, they're going to say yes or no.
Well, yes and no. And that's because, fortunately, in New York State, we have the New York Court of Appeals. And the New York Court of Appeals can certainly provide us much more protection than the Supreme Court is. Well, the Supreme Court is just terrible today, and they're not much interested in providing search and seizure protection. But the New York Court of Appeals, as long as it doesn't violate somebody's federal constitutional rights, can provide more protection. And the New York Court of Appeals does, and I'm confident it will.
So let me get this straight. So if, in fact, the New York State Court of Appeals steps in,
that's right,
and says you guys have exceeded the Fourth Amendment, now interpreting the United States Constitution as well as the state constitution, can't somebody appeal that? Can't the New York Police Department appeal that to the federal courts?
Well, they could only appeal it if the New York Court of Appeals says that it is depending upon the Fourth Amendment. Yeah. If the New York Court of Appeals says, no, we're depending upon our own case law and our own protections in the state constitution, the Supreme Court has absolutely no authority to review that decision. And the New York Court of Appeals does that from time to time. Thank God. That's why we have a decent court and why we have more protections in this state.
Now, you're a great legal scholar. We all know it. You're called upon by the I mean it. You're called upon by the national media, the state media, to sort of provide background and to help understand what's going on. So, but I want to ask you to put on a different kind of hat, a psychological hat.
Right.
People are always interested first in safety.
That's
quote,
right.
Safety. I wanted to ask you about that because, there's a lot of, look, there are real elements of racism in all of this, obviously.
That's right.
Your chances of getting picked up if you're black are just much greater than if you have
That's right. In fact,
skin.
The figures show that almost 90% of the stops are made of African Americans and Hispanics. So, I mean, we know what's going on.
Yeah, we do. And also, the social psychologists and others are going to be able to start bringing us studies, I'm sure they've been done already, which say, you want to traumatize somebody for the rest of their life?
That's right.
One pickup because you're walking while black,
That's right.
Can be incredibly damaging.
Well, Alan, just a few blocks from here, we have the Criminal Justice School. It's the best one in the country, right, at University of Albany. Mm-hmm. They study these things. I mean, they know what's happening down on the street. They study the causes and effects of all these stop and frisks that really are worthless.
You know, it's really interesting. I know that this is non-sequitorial, but I do remember walking back from Hebrew school on Central Park when I was 12 years old, and a guy pops up from a bench and makes a very bad suggestion to me. I'm not going into I remembered it. Here I am, 70 years old, you know, and you can imagine what a police officer saying, stopping a kid who's 11 or 12 or 14 can do to the psyche.
Well, of course, and especially if the only reason for doing that is it's a bad neighborhood, meaning it's a poor black or Hispanic neighborhood, and the individual is doing something that the police officer just isn't quite sure exactly what he's doing. Well, that's not exactly, I mean, constitutional grounds for stopping the individual and then frisking him. And so what does that do to that individual? What does that do to the security of the entire neighborhood?
Well, we got a lot of people on the phone, 1-800-348-2551. We're talking to Professor Vince Bonventure, who is, of course, one of the top thinkers on our courts. So let us go to Robert from Schenectady. Robert, you're on.
Hey, Alan, how you doing?
I'm good. Can you hear Vince?
Yes, I can now.
Great. I'm sorry. Go ahead, Robert.
Well, I just have a quick comment first and a question about the stop and frisk thing. I always was taught that, we the people constituted the government, you know, and I heard Mitt Romney on the news, the authority comes from God. And I just think that he's really kind of confused about it. You know, I always thought that, you know, we the people were the government. We were the authority. I don't know if the constitutional, professor had any comment on that or not, but I mean, that's what I was taught in school.
Well, that's true, of course. I mean, this is a republic. I mean, it's for the people, by the people, right, of the people. However, I mean, the Constitution, both the state and the federal, do allow the police officers to do their work. And part of what it allows is the police officers to stop someone if there is some good reason to suspect that the individual's involved in criminality. The problem with what's going on in New York City is that in most of these cases, there doesn't seem to be much of a reasonable basis to have any suspicion whatsoever, except that it happens to be a minority in a poor minority neighborhood. I mean, that's why these figures are so alarming. I mean, almost 700,000 stops last year, and overwhelmingly, they uncovered nothing, which means that there really wasn't a good basis for the suspicion to begin with in about 90% of these cases.
Robert, real quick, anything back?
Well, just a quick comment. You know, I had an experience that really wasn't a stop and frisk, but it was. I felt like it was. I was coming home on the thruway a couple of weeks ago, and I came around the corner, and the whole, thruway toll booth was blocked off by state troopers. And they were checking, inspection stickers.
Sure.
And I pulled up, and the gentleman, the policeman was very polite, and but he said, "Where are you coming from?" And I said, "I'm coming from Lousville." And he said, "Lousville." And he said, "What were you doing there?" And I said, "I'm a visiting friend." And he said, "Where are you going?" And I said, "I'm going to Schenectady." And he said, "Why are you going there?" And I guess I because I live there. It was just a very, I'm like, I was just kind of shocked, and I'm thinking, why are you, I don't feel like I'm being profiled. I'm a white guy with short hair, driving home on the thruway.
You never tell. You can tell, Robert. I very quickly because we got five people on the waiting on the phone. But one time I was driving to see a friend in up in Binghamton at Harper College. So you know how long ago that was. A cop stopped me. Police officer stopped me and told me to get out of the car and ask where I stole the car from.
Oh my God!
And the reason was that I had a Hunter College sticker on the back. I went to Hunter in the Bronx. For parking, and he said to me, "Hunter's a girl's school."
Oh, geez. So he thought you stole a car. Yeah.
Hunter's a girl's school. Right. So, where do you go to school? And, the issue is whether I had said to the cops something really bad as a result of that, I would have been in the station house right now.
Sure.
As well as if you had said, why are you hassling me? I mean, there is that. Hey, Robert, great call. Thank you.
Great. Thank you, Alan.
Right. Bye. Let's go to Bob in Cambridge. Bob, you're on.
Hi,
Bob, you stay right there. We have to take a little break. We'll be right with you. Zach, the engineer, is furious with me. Go ahead.
Okay. Support for WAMC comes from the Blue Bonnet Diner, Northampton. Since 1950, offering breakfast, lunch, and dinner, banquet facilities seating 150, banquet menus, bar services, and dance floor, bluebonnetdiner.net. Curtis Lumber, proudly serving their communities for over 100 years, providing lumber, building materials, doors, windows, paint, and more for 21 locations in New York and Northern Vermont. CurtisLumber.com. Tanglewood, the Boston Symphony, conductors Ken Mazur and Kurt Mazur with pianist Gerhard Oppitz in an all-Mozart program Sunday, July 22nd at 2:30 p.m., Tanglewood.org. Hanford Mills Museum, East Meredith, New York. Presenting demonstrations, workshops, and hands-on history activities, open Wednesdays through Sundays, 10 a.m. to 5 p.m., hanfordmills.org. And Skidmore College Master's Program, offering individualized graduate studies in a wide range of interdisciplinary fields, masters at skidmore.edu.
And we are back with Bob from Cambridge. Bob, I'm so sorry for keeping you waiting. Go right ahead.
No problem. I was waiting with bated breath. Hey, I think it was Thomas Jefferson who said those who forego liberty for security deserve neither, or was it Samuel Johnson? Either way.
I think his good buddy Benjamin Franklin said that, but probably several people did.
One of those fathers, as they called them, right? But to me, it's an amazing thing that we're even having this discussion, because you wouldn't think that the United States would have decayed into this police state. And that seems to be what it is, And I wasn't even aware of this about 3 days ago when I read about this whole stop and frisk policy down in New York City. But I also felt a twing of conscience here when this gentleman talked about being stopped at the toll booth by state troopers. Because this happened to me on the way up to Canada, 75 miles within the border of Canada, or outside the border. And they were stopping, they were asking, where are you going? What are you doing? And I'm saying, wait a second. It's like, I'm an American citizen, I don't have to answer these questions. I have a right to travel freely. But it seems like all these little things are being eroded by a Supreme Court that seems to be, a very conservative majority. But, this is a conservative right. I mean, the right to be able to travel freely without being stopped and questioned, the right to not be asked where you're going or whatever. I mean, these are inherent basic principles in the Constitution.
Okay, Bob, only because we have so many people on the phone, I want to give Vince a chance. No, that's all right. You did very well. Let me ask Vince to respond.
Well, over the last approximately three decades, the United States Supreme Court has really cut back on search and seizure rights, not only because a few of the justices think that the court had gone too far to the left, but because those who ran for president and won, and the American people thought that the Supreme Court had gone too far to the left, meaning that they were protecting the rights of suspects, rights of individuals too vigorously. In fact, what happened over the last three decades is that the Supreme Court has made it absolutely clear that in its view, there is no violation whatsoever of the federal constitution for a police officer to confront an individual and ask questions, even incriminating questions, in short, to interrogate an individual as long as they don't arrest that individual. So they can come up to anybody and start asking questions about possible criminality. They can come up to anybody and say, may we search you? May we search your bags? May we search your luggage? Even if the police have absolutely no suspicion, no basis even for a hunch. Now, thank God, those of us in New York State have the New York Court of Appeals, which does not permit, under the New York State Constitution, does not permit police to start asking incriminating questions or even ask for permission to search unless the police have some good reason for doing
so. Can't they always make up a reason?
Oh, they can. You know, look, yeah. A good police officer, somebody who's been on the beat for a while, somebody with a lot of experience, they can somehow generate suspicion. But the Court of Appeals has been pretty good for the last 30 or 40 years about requiring the police to have some reason for stopping somebody and asking questions that might be incriminating.
So the moral of the story is never go to South Carolina.
Oh, absolutely.
Hey, Bob, thanks for the call.
Thank you, Alan.
Okay,
keep
bye-bye.
Up the good work.
Yeah.
Take care.
Let's go to Tom in Hudson. Hiya, Tom. How you doing?
I'm fine. I hate to tell you, but everything that I was going to say has already been said by the callers ahead of me, so I'll make it real short.
All right.
Those who give up security in the name, or those who give up liberty in the name of security, will have neither. Thomas Jefferson.
You might not have been listening when the last guy said the same thing, but go ahead.
All right.
Same
thing.
So, quote.
In any case, I would suggest this. For the people who actually have the guts, when the police ask you where you're going and where you're coming from, etc., very calmly, very politely, simply tell them, "No, officer, I will not divulge that information," and then shut your mouth.
And as they say to you, "Follow me to the station."
That's right. That's right.
Let them say, "Follow me to the station," and you hit them with the lawsuit of their lives.
Yeah, well, you know, that's easy to say because it costs
and
a lot.
And it's also easy to do, Alan.
Yeah.
It's been done many, many, many times. The cops are getting sued constantly. The mainstream media does not cover it.
Vince?
Well, you might want to sue, but I doubt you're going to be terribly successful. And one of the reasons for that is the United States Supreme Court has held fairly recently that for the police to be following someone, it doesn't even matter whether it's an hour, 2 hours, 3 hours. It doesn't matter if the police get out of their car and start chasing you. That does not even implicate the Constitution. Now, that's this Supreme Court. The New York Court of Appeals really hasn't weighed in exactly on something like that. I suspect that they would go the opposite way.
Well, Tom,
can I please make one last quick comment?
Of course, yeah.
People have the power, but they give it away. If everybody simply, politely, calmly refused to cooperate, then they'd stop doing it.
Tom,
thank you.
All good points. Thank you very much. All right, let's go to Mike in Columbia County. Hey, Mike, you're on.
Hello, I just had a question for Professor Bonventry. Whether he thought that more case law needed to come down from the Court of Appeals in this area, or whether increased training by the police would help.
Well, certainly increased training for the police would help, but I think we are almost certainly going to see case law coming down at the New York Court of Appeals as a result of these two cases coming out of Manhattan, where the mid-level appeals court reversed convictions in two different cases involving 14-year-olds in the Bronx. Two mid-level courts overturned them, and they did so on the basis that the stops and the frisks were unconstitutional. That case will go before the New York Court of Appeals, and I suspect within a year we will get an answer and we will get further elaboration from the New York Court of Appeals what search and seizure protections we have in New York.
Mike?
Professor, do you think they're going to further refine the reasonable suspicion standard, or are they going to more hone in on there's reasonable suspicion required for the stop and then a separate reasonable suspicion for the frisk, or maybe increase it to probable cause?
Well, you know, that really is an excellent question, because most of the time the notion of reasonable suspicion is collapsed. So as soon as a reasonable person can have suspicion, then we think that the police are permitted to stop and then also frisk. That's not true. There's got to be reasonable suspicion that there might be some criminality going on. That allows the police to stop somebody and ask questions. That does not allow the police to frisk unless the police have separate reasonable suspicion that the person is dangerous or armed. Too often, those two things get collapsed. I am sure that the Court of Appeals is going to make that distinction and make it very, very clear.
Oh, Mike, good. Great questions. Thank you very much.
Well, I had a good teacher at Albany Law and Constitution.
Thank you.
Have a good day.
That's
thanks.
Great. Let's go to James in Monroe. James in Monroe, you're on.
Yes, hi. I just got 2 points, and then to follow up with a quick point, they're all quick. When I was a kid back in 69, I graduated. I had a friend from Newburgh that I was meeting in Newburgh. And my sister had just come back from Atlantic City, and she had a General Ward Psycho shirt for me, you know, a joke shirt. Anybody could tell it was a joke shirt. I was standing on the corner, and a cop says, "Where'd you get that shirt?" I said, "Well," I said, "that's really none of your business."
Wait, James, what did the shirt say again?
General Ward Psycho.
Say what?
Psycho.
Okay, yeah, go ahead. Doesn't matter what it said.
It was something nasty. Let's make believe it was something nasty.
Yeah, okay. So, James, are you still there?
At any rate, I got a good beat and dragged down the precinct and made the wait there till the last bus went out of town. Then they let me go, and they were laughing. And they kind of told me not to come back.
Well, that's clearly illegal what happened to you.
It was in 69, though. Things were a lot different up there, and it was like the Wild West.
Well, you know, Tom would have said to you, you should have sued him. How come you didn't sue him?
Yeah, I'm lucky to get out of there alive.
James, thanks for the great call. Appreciate it.
Yeah. What was on his shirt?
I don't know. We don't really know that. Let's go to Jesse in Albany. Jesse, you're on.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Just I'm glad to hear this discussion, and I'm glad that that this has now become an issue in the news. I was recently on a jury in Troy, and basically there was a young black guy who was caught jaywalking by the police, and they frisked him, and there was an alleged gun, and essentially, there was not much evidence, and the jury ended up letting him off. But I was really surprised in our deliberations at how much carte blanche people were willing to give the police. I thought that he shouldn't have been stopped in the first place and that the whole thing seemed kind of bogus from the start. But essentially, all of the other jurors were not with me on that. They thought the police can kind of do what they want. They can stop people for any reason. Sure. They can frisk you for any reason. And the fact that we're having this discussion and getting the word out there, I think, is important because I think people are generally uninformed about their rights and about, you know.
Did you hold out, Jess, did you hold out?
Oh, yeah.
Were you Henry Fonda, the last angry man?
we got him off on the, it was a gun charge, so it was a serious thing. And I was glad to be able to
justice. We got to do a new movie with you, Jess.
Yeah.
No, look, it's absolutely unlawful for the police to stop and, well, to frisk somebody who's jaywalking. They're not allowed to frisk an individual unless they have some reason to actually suspect that the individual is armed.
Uh-huh.
There's no carte blanche that you stop somebody for jaywalking and you get to frisk them. I mean, I don't know what they were doing. Unless there's something else going on you didn't hear about at the trial.
I'm thinking, although it's non-sequitorial, I'm thinking of going through the metal detectors at the airport. And with some regularity, people get frisked all the time. Have you thought about that one at all?
Well, sure. Well, now you're talking about a special situation involving a special mode of transportation, and the law has allowed special intrusions for everybody's safety. It's a different situation.
Jess, thanks a lot. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Yeah, let's go to Abigail in Kingston. Abigail, you're on.
Hi, Alan.
Hey.
Oh, God. This is a very, 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 very important topic. I'm so glad you brought it up. Thank you also for Richard D. Wolf. I can't rehearse this. It has to come from my heart. I was a victim of police abuse years ago, and I never sued because the climate at the time, political climate and the personal is political, would not be in my favor, and I would have spent money I didn't have on lawyers. I felt very strongly about the victimization of myself. And
what was the story?
Oh, it's a long story, and
well,
I don't really
short,
want
to do it short.
Make it short. Make it short. I was driving from Woodstock to Kingston. It was the end of the month. The police had to make their state troopers had to make their quota. I mean, this is information that is true. And I was driving on 28. Anyway, I didn't stop. There was the red light behind me, but I thought, it's not for me. I'm doing nothing wrong. Anyway, I get to an intersection in Kingston where the Trailways and Friendlies was. Trailways is still there, Friendlies is not. And there are three sheriff's vans blocking a blockade. And they come to the car. I am 5'1", at least. Maybe I'm 5 feet. I must have shrunk. But I stop, of course, because, you know, meanwhile, I had stopped at a red light before that. It's a ridiculous story.
Okay,
absolutely.
Okay, we get the basis of the story. Right. Of course, you're supposed to stop when there's a cop behind you. We know.
Right.
That. Yeah. Okay.
Well, anyway, yes. So I did the wrong thing.
Frisk you?
Forget about frisking. They beat the shit out of me. Excuse my language.
Yeah, you're not allowed to say that.
I'm sorry. But anyway, they pulled me out of the car. First, cut my seatbelt, pulled me out of the car, threw me to the ground, handcuffed me behind my back, and then threw me into the state trooper's van, and I sat in the state trooper's offices on Route 28 until 3 o'clock in the morning when someone came to pick me up. I am still suffering from this experience.
Okay, so how do you relate that to what we're talking about right now?
You know, right now, I think basically we have to keep... We have to keep civil liberties up front. You know, it seems to me that the police have an incredible amount of power in terms of unions and everything else. I also worked as training correction officers in 1980 because it was the only money I could make. I mean, this is a life story, so it's very important. It's a very complicated question, but I don't want to see more power go to the police. I've been following the stop and frisk story for many moons, and I think it's awful. I think it's absolutely awful, and our liberties are being taken over.
Abigail, thank you for the call. We got a lot of people behind you. And don't use those words on the radio anymore.
I will. Okay.
Let's go to Lisa in Albany. Lisa.
Yeah, I have a question. I wondered if the two of you could, we've been talking a lot about what the police can and cannot do. And I think that any officer might be getting away with doing something they shouldn't be doing, part of it is because the public doesn't understand, we don't understand what we can do. We're sort of like where the rubber hits the road. What does it look like when somebody is stopped by the police? What if that person wants to say or feels that something's happening that's wrong? What can they say to the officer? What can they say they are willing and will not or will not do? Like, if you're walking along the street and your ID is demanded, if you're walking along the street and they start asking you a lot of questions or whatever. I think you
okay,
understand
I think
what
Lisa,
I'm saying.
Lisa, we can understand what you're saying,
Thank you.
Professor.
Sure. I mean, well, you're certainly free to ask the police officer, you know, if there's any reason why you're being asked for your ID, if there's any reason why you're being stopped. The fact of the matter is the remedies for somebody who is wrongfully stopped, even remedies for somebody who's wrongfully frisked, are pretty thin. We get the remedies when somebody's actually guilty of something. So if an individual is wrongfully stopped and frisked and the police officers do find a weapon on that individual, that weapon will not be allowed into evidence, and so the individual will probably get off. So we have remedies for those who are guilty, but for those who are innocent, I mean, you can bring a lawsuit, but, you know, these things cost a fortune.
Right, exactly.
We really need courts to come up with remedies that are practicable.
You know, Lisa, it's very interesting that you raise that question because I've read a number of sort of case studies or newspaper reports in which African-American mothers or fathers say to their children, you know, always act respectful no matter what, because it's not worth it. You really have to do that. Tom called earlier and said, well, if we all did the right thing, you know, this kind of thing would stop. But, you know, there's the what should be as well as the sort of what is in all of this.
Well, just in a quick response to that, I think part of what One, I wanted to know, just so anybody's listening could know what our rights are. But the second thing is, in any part of our American life, when there's push and you know shove, when the party that wants to push sees that they're going to have more difficulty accomplishing that push, then they might hesitate. So the more, in my view, the more the American public, the more American children, the more every individual understands what their right is, what sure. exactly that looks like, and the more the police are aware that we all know what our rights are, the less likely they will push, is what my thought is.
You know, it's a, by the way, Lisa, it's a very good thought. We're up against the post here. We
Absolutely.
Thank you. We thank you for the call. Thanks very much.
Thank you.
Very good.
Support for WAMC comes from Buckley Beef, Valley Falls, New York, providing all-natural grass-fed beef, steaks, hamburger, and sausage available at Niskayuna Co-op, Schenectady. BuckleyBeef.com. SPAC, presenting the 22nd Annual Saratoga Chamber Music Festival, sponsored by WAMC and WMHT, featuring the Worcester Quartet performing Boccherini, WC, and Donani, Tuesday, August 7th in the Spa Little Theater, SPAC.org. Dr. Joe Hanning, Capital District and New York City, specializing in occupational and environmental health and prevention, including back disorders, water contamination, new technology, and mold problems. JoeHanningMD.com. Historic Hyde Park, presenting Teaching the Hudson Valley from the Civil War to the Civil Rights. Programs for educators, July 24th to 26th. HistoricHydePark.org. In Wheels of Time in Pine Plains, New York, offering coachwork, upholstery, and vehicle maintenance for classic and vintage cars and trucks. WheelsOfTimeInc.com.
And we are back. We thank you all for staying with us. We have one free phone, 1-800-348-2551. Vince, it's the first time, out of respect for you, sir, that we've had a single free phone since we've begun this program. So really great. Okay, let's go to Melanie in Poughkeepsie. Melanie, you're on.
Hi, Alan. Yes, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
And this is in response. I thought what the previous woman just asked was very, very important. And I want to address her question and answer, and also what one of the gentlemen said, that there are things that you can do. So, number one, they are taken when the police go into office. They have to take an oath of office and a bond. So you don't have to see anything to them. You immediately ask them for their oath of office and their bond. And you do not have to talk to them at all. And there is something that's called a Title 42, which I am doing right now against the officer judge in New Paltz, New York. I'm going against the city of New Paltz as well as the tow truck company. It does not cost you a lot of money. You do not have to hire a lawyer. And that is a very, very powerful. So it is extremely important that people don't know how powerful they are. They don't know their rights, and that the first thing that they ask the police officer is for their oath of office and their bond.
Okay, Vince?
Thank you very much for that question. With regard to the Title 42, remember, we're talking about federal law, which means that there's got to be a complaint that the United States Supreme Court's decisions will be saying that there is some violation of the federal Constitution. And the fact of the matter is, when it comes to stop and frisks, this court has been absolutely dreadful. If you take those two cases where there were reversed convictions in Manhattan just a couple of weeks ago, there is no doubt in my mind that the United States Supreme Court, if it had reviewed those two cases, it would have said that there was justification for a stop and frisk. Now, Title 42, again, it's federal law. It depends upon what the Supreme Court thinks is required under the Fourth Amendment. I don't think in cases like those two coming out of the Manhattan mid-level courts that the plaintiffs would have won.
Melanie, very quickly, because we got a lot of people behind you.
Okay. Well, there's another thing that is a part of all this. So 3 days after you're born, your mother signs a birth certificate. She's called an informant, and she signs you up from an upper and lowercase name to an all uppercase name, which is called your, which is you are now a corporation. You're a corporate identity that they monetize and they control you through this corporate name. And if you look at any of your documents, whether it's your checkbook, your license, your credit card statements, an all uppercase name, and that's how they have jurisdiction over you in the de facto government, the Admiralty Time Law, which we are under now, which our original constitution, we are supposed to be under common law.
Melanie, thank you very much for your phone call. Appreciate it very much. Thanks. Let's go to Howard in Delmar. Howard, you're on.
Good afternoon. I'm totally surprised that you have not yet mentioned the Patriot Act, because the Patriot Act is basically of the rules by which our country is governed. The police, which is a militarized force, do not answer to anybody, because every time you bring a policeman to court or put a complaint, they get off scot-free.
Okay, Howard, you just stop right there, and yes. Professor?
I think there are enough complexities and problems with this stop-and-frisk issue before we even get to the Patriot Act. I mean, that's just a whole nother cauldron of...
Exactly.
Okay, yeah. Howard, as always, thanks for joining us. Appreciate it. Let's go to Frank in New Paltz. Frank, you're on.
Hi, Alan, Professor. Thanks for the program.
Sure.
On personal experience, I wanted to talk about, started in New York City, Brooklyn, when I was a teenager, you know, getting stopped by a police officer and being pulled out of the car. And in those days, obviously, their baton, they like to swing that baton around. And I think in that situation, I was fortunate that they got an emergency call and they ended up jumping in their car and leaving. But I had another experience in good old South Carolina. And I was driving my girlfriend at the time, driving to Florida, and going to visit my sister. My girlfriend didn't know exactly where my sister was, so he did the whole thing. He separated us. He actually made me sign documents saying I need to search your car. And first he asked me, do you have any large sums of guns or large sums of money and any ammunition in your car? And I said, officer, we're going to Florida, you know. And then he, you know, I signed the paperwork, and of course, I didn't know. I was 20 years old. He started searching our car, and of course, you know, he sees a piece of foil in the trunk, and it's a tuna fish sandwich. It just felt like, I think earlier you indicated.
How old are you now?
I'm 44.
Which goes to show you how traumatic something like this can be, that you remember it that well.
Oh, Alan, it is so vivid, and I've, you know, every stop I've had in my life, I'm an educated man, I got master's degrees, et cetera, and you just still always feel
so
I
assume you are not African American.
I am Latino. So driving while Latinos concerns me more today, because I know many people, and you know, now they ask you, I'm a born American citizen, and now they want to find out in some states whether you have your paperwork in order or not. You know.
Yeah, but sound like you're from New York City, which probably is reasonable suspicion in South Carolina.
Exactly. That's it. Well,
hey
that's
Frank,
probably what happened.
We're going to let you go. Thanks, Frank.
Yeah,
appreciate
thank you for the program. They're important issue.
Sure. Let's go to RJ in Albany. RJ, you're on. RJ, try it again. RJ, are you there? Okay, good.
I'm here, yep.
Okay.
Back when Mayor Giuliani was mayor of New York,
right.
He started this program where in order to rid, I believe it was targeted at Washington Square Park in Lower Manhattan, that he started this program where the police were actually going to pretend like they were drug dealers and ask, you know, passers-by if they wanted to buy something. And then if, I guess, you know, the people wanted to buy something, they would get arrested, which was pretty radical, you know, policy back then. And I was wondering the constitutionality of that.
Well, I mean, the police can ask you, do you want candy? Do you want this? Do you want that? I mean, as long as they're not requiring you to answer any questions, as long as they're not detaining you, there's...
Well, they do it with johns and sex workers all the time.
Yeah, I mean, they're a sting operation, so, you know.
Okay, all right. I had one other thing to ask. This notion that we should just not cooperate with the police, that, you know, some people have said, you know, isn't always very realistic, you know, especially parents their kids, as Alan mentioned.
Sure.
Wouldn't it be best just to cooperate with the police and then try to document everything that happened, so when you go to court, you know, rather than confronting them and maybe making the situation much worse?
Well, I mean, it's always better to be polite, to be courteous with the police officers. I mean, I certainly wouldn't try to elevate any situation where the police are already suspicious of you for something.
Yeah, you can turn it around real quickly, RJ. Remember I told the story, I don't know if you were listening earlier, about how I was stopped by a trooper who said that I had stolen the car because he thought I had stolen the car because I went to Hunter College. It was a girl's school. And what I didn't tell you was that there was a guy in the car who decided to put his head out the window and use a terrible expletive to the cop. And the cop immediately said, okay, get in the car and follow me to the headquarters, which I just begged him. I said, no, I got to see my girlfriend and this and that, you know. And he said, okay, you're a good kid. Okay, you don't have to. So they have tremendous discretion, is your point.
That's right.
The point. Thank you, RJ. Very wise call. Appreciate
Thank
it.
You.
Yeah. Let's go to Sharon in Hurley. Okay, Sharon in Hurley, go.
Hello. What about flagging? Does flagging constitute reasonable cause? For those who don't know, flagging is... Modern gangs have kind of recreated medieval heraldry, and they wear their colors and they have their symbols. And having learned about some of the gang symbols and flagging, I've gone to my local McDonald's and seen a guy in a white shirt with a big red no snitch sign on it, who clearly was a member of the Bloods, throwing hand signs. Would this constitute reasonable cause?
Well, a reasonable suspicion has got to be based on some criminal activity going on right now. I mean, the police just can't stop and frisk or even arrest somebody simply because they've got tattoos, they've got a uniform, they've got a special.
You mean they
handshake.
Shouldn't? You don't mean they you say they
Physically,
can't.
Physically, they can. Physically, yeah, they can. But right. Legally, they can't. I mean, legally, there's got to be some justification.
So, legally wearing. Clearly identifiable signs that you are a member of a criminal organization, that's flagging.
But that's not illegal. Suppose I were to wear that kind of identification. I mean, it doesn't mean that I'm engaged in criminality.
But on the other hand, Sharon, just remember about all of those stops that we talked about in the very beginning of the show, where only a couple of percentage end up finding anything. You know, they've done all of those stops. That is what is, as opposed to you know, what should be.
That's right.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Right. Let's go to Colin in Greenfield, Massachusetts. Colin.
Hey.
Hey.
Just like to say, I love this show. I'm 22, you know, I'm kind of a young kid, but I've had a lot of interaction with police just because apparently the way I look, I'm a young white kid, you know, clean cut, but apparently because of either the car I drive or the fact that I wear a hat, you know, I've been messed with quite a few times by the police.
What kind of a hat are you wearing?
A Boston hat.
Oh, well, that would do it. Driving while a Boston fan in Yankee territory.
No, you know, I live in Mass. You know, it doesn't really matter. Apparently in Massachusetts, if you wear a hat, it's, you know, something where they're more inclined to pull you over.
Oh, I don't know.
My
part of my identity is to never take my hat off. So,
yeah.
I don't know. I've never been stopped.
But I've noticed that if you just, you know, talk to a cop like they're a regular person and don't be intimidated, you know, I always assert my right. I know what they're allowed to do. I've been asked to get out of my vehicle. I've been asked for them to search my vehicle. And I always say no. And, you know, one time he called another police officer and it was a whole thing. But most of the time they're very respectful about it and they just will let you go about your business. But you can't show them that you're intimidated by their authority.
Right. There's no reason to presume that every time you have any contact with a police officer, you're facing the enemy. You know, you're absolutely right about that.
Right. Just...
Okay. Thanks a lot. Appreciate
it. No problem.
Yeah.
Bye.
Let's go to Elizabeth in Port Washington. No, she's gone. Elizabeth deserted us. Hey, Wednesday. Elizabeth deserted us. Okay. In Port Washington. Let's go to Andy in Kingston. Okay, Andy, you're on.
Hey, gentlemen. How you doing today?
We're good.
Hey, just a very brief story. I have some students who were from Albany, and they were driving New York plates down through the South. They were going through Georgia at about 85 miles an hour when they got pulled over. And the cop was talking to them, and it was a state patrolman. He said, he said to the kid driving, he said, "Boy, no one goes through my state that fast." And one of the kids in the back seat said, "Yeah, except for Sherman's Army." Out of the car. And they spent the night. In the county lockup in Georgia.
Well, you make a very good point. I mean, the point is, why, you know, why wave a red flag in front of somebody? Hey, thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Okay, let's go to Tim in Guilderland. Tim in Guilderland, you're there.
Hey, I'm going to disagree with you and your guest, and I really appreciate it. And by the way, I appreciate the thing you do is you always allow and always present both sides of the story.
Thank you for that.
Absolutely. It's very important. I think Stop and Frisk has saved thousands of lives.
Mm.
And I believe there was a court decision in Ohio that was relied upon in New York about the Stop and Frisk policy. And your guest knows more about this than I do. But routinely, when I fly, me and everybody else is stopped and frisked with zero probable cause. Zero.
You know, I asked that question earlier, Tim. I don't think you were listening at that point about the airport and the stop and frisk. And Vince said,
right, special safety concerns because of the special mode of travel.
But I'm really delighted you're calling.
Absolutely. And Tim, you know, but you're absolutely right. There isn't anything wrong with stop and frisk. And thank God that there are stops and frisks. But the constitutions, both of the federal government and New York State, and every other state in the country requires that there be some justification. That's all we're talking about. We're talking about stops and frisks where there's no justification. But certainly we want the police to stop someone, ask questions, and then even to frisk them if there's justification for believing the individuals are armed or dangerous. Absolutely, you're right.
You know, police officers know their jobs. These are professionals.
Oh, yes.
I worked for the New York City Police Department as a consultant for a period of time. And I used to ride around. I've told this story before in a patrol car. Sophisticated police can take a look at a street corner, three guys standing there and say, and I remember this very well, that's a crime waiting to happen. And I said, what are you going to do about it? And the answer is nothing. You can't anticipate it. You got to wait until it happened. So, Tim, I'm really glad you called, and you made a very important call.
I think it's very, and by the way, cops know what they're doing. I mean, they live it every day. Their life and death depends on it. So anyway, I appreciate it. Thanks, Alan.
Thank you very much, Tim. Okay. 1-800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. And we have very little time left, Vince. I wonder if you could sort of summarize what we've heard today.
Sure. And let me add a few other things. Remember, what we're talking about here are stops of individuals, detentions by the government without a warrant. We're not talking about a warrant in these situations. We're not even talking about probable cause, right?
Yeah. You know, we're also talking about what the law says versus what prudent behavior might be in some of these situations. Okay, so we're just about out of time. I want to thank everyone who called in. Apologize to those who were just calling now, a little late. Thanks to Professor Vince Bonventure for joining us today. Vox Pop support comes from... I'm putting my glasses on, folks. Here we go. All right. Comes because a little tiny writing here. Bard Summerscape presenting Emmanuel Chabrier's comic opera, The King in Spite of Himself, featuring American Symphony Orchestra conducted by Leon Botstein. July 27th through August 5th, 845-758-7900. The Hudson River Valley National Heritage Area announcing Hudson River Valley Ramble weekends in September. Events showcasing the natural and cultural resources of Hudson River Valley. Hudson River Valley Ramble.com. Unusual wedding rings and more in Crawford Square, North Street, downtown Pittsfield. Jewelry Emporium providing traditional and non-traditional engagement, wedding, and anniversary rings for conventional and same-sex couples. UnusualWeddingRings.com. Berkshire Medical Center's joint replacement program, private rooms, pre-surgical education, rehabilitation program coordinator, and six orthopedic surgeons, 413-395-7680. Thanks again, everybody, for joining us on the Vox Pop. Thanks again, because we loved your calls and you were terrific. Thanks to our wonderful engineer, Zach Malloy, our wonderful volunteers, our producers, Patrick Donges. I'm Alan Chartok. Stay tuned now for a news update.